Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for Labor Day weekend, kind of a halfway point between the two conventions. So we should have an exciting show. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello.
Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
And also joining us for the first time in a few weeks / months, Melanie, welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Yes, we're going to have a nice little round table in the first half hour, talking about the convention, maybe some of the Republican side of things going on. But then we're going to go pretty heavy into the Republican side because we should have Adam Clemens, who writes for hometownheadlines.com and does the Republican column for that publication, joining us in the second half hour to kind of give us a Republican preview from a Republican perspective and maybe a few other national things. But, goodness, what a week. Catherine and I were on all week, and so maybe we'll kind of hold off, or we may give ours at the end. But, Melanie, what was your strongest impression from the convention that you saw all week?
Well, I felt like we were all pretty connected. I think this was one of the most blogged and most photographed and most videoed conventions ever. There was some amazing independent media going on around the web. And, you know, I have to give a shout-out to Bernita Smith, too, because I think she did a remarkable job. I really felt like we were there. She took the time and trouble to sort of live blog the whole thing. But, I mean, overall, it felt as if a weight had been lifted off my shoulders is the only way I can describe it. You know, it's just been such a long, frustrating road that Democrats have traveled these last years, and it was a relief. I loved the way that they started sort of emotionally on the first day, and then the sort of intensity level and the rhetoric ratcheted up and up and up throughout the week, and then they had this big crescendo in the stadium, which was just awe-inspiring. I mean, it was amazing.
Yes, Tim, what did you take out of the convention?
Well, frankly, I thought the first two nights of the convention were just a bit slow until we got to Hillary Clinton. Then things started getting interesting, and I was really, really, really satisfied to see Senator Obama really go after those Republicans in his speech. I was glad to see that.
Yes, and I guess, Catherine, I've talked a bit through the week, but, Catherine, after seeing the whole thing, what was your biggest impression?
Well, I loved it. I thought it was great. I tend to agree with Tim that it sort of built up to the crescendo of Senator Obama's speech on Thursday. But today I was talking to a friend of mine here. I'm in Michigan for the weekend, and she said it just feels good to kind of feel like we're part of the cool crowd again. You know, we're like it was so invigorating and exciting and flashy and fun. Everybody seemed to be having a good time, and the live blogging and the new media stuff was made us all feel very connected, like Melanie said. So I think it's fun to be part of the cool crowd again.
So supporting Walter Mondale in 84 wasn't part of the cool crowd? Man,
no.
I was not in the loop back in sixth grade, I guess.
Even the old media was, just seemed to be right on top of things. I think this convention almost single-handedly brought back the cable news channels. And, you know, I was looking at some numbers before I dialed in, and 38.4 million viewers watched Barack's speech on Thursday night, which is more people than watched the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. And, you know, that's huge. That's just an enormous increase over previous years. So,
yes, in television, the networks did do their part in that. They don't have anything on to compete, so it's not hard to want to watch you know, history in the making, if you will. I will say that the one thing that really stood out to me was I was just so happy that Michelle Obama was able to have that video of herself, have her brother, who I thought did an excellent job for a non-politician, introduce her. They showed her mother. She told her story of her family. She spoke. The whole, and then the kids came on. The whole thing just completely flew in the face of this caricature that the Republicans have spent so many months now trying to create of her as this person that's just not like the average mother, the average American woman. And it was just a way to just totally, you know, counter that. And I was so glad it happened. And I guess it did stand in contrast to the rest of the first night, which, as Tim alluded to, was very blasé. Did anybody else have any impressions of hopefully the next First Lady?
Well, I thought she was really great. I thought she was very natural and warm. I found her speech to be very not casual and not informal, but very generous and very, you know, I love authenticity, and I found her very authentic. Not that I ever haven't before, but I thought she conveyed an authenticity that we don't always see in speakers like that. The other thing that I think I found very satisfying about all the speeches, even though some of them are a little bit dull, I thought it was great that we heard from some of the younger voices in the party, not just in the party, but like Michelle Obama's brother, and I can't remember the guy who introduced Bill Clinton, but he was a young congressman from Florida, and I was really happy to see some younger faces. I mean, we had our, you know, old white guys as well, but and they were many of them were very dynamic. I thought Brian Schweitzer was awesome. Whenever that was Wednesday night, I guess. So I think it was nice to see some new and some younger faces at the convention because, you know, oftentimes it's just the same. They bring out the same old guys like we've always seen. I thought that was I admire the people who planned the convention to put some of those newer faces, and I thought that was really valuable.
Yes, Brian Schweitzer, I noticed his body language. He seemed more like a stand-up comedian in his body language than he did a politician. Melanie, were you going to say something?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, speaking of younger Democrats, I was sort of, and I think everybody probably had the same reaction, but I sort of cringed when Michelle handed the microphone to her little 7-year-old. I guess that's Malia. And, you know, that those children were just, like, unbelievably well-behaved and adorable. And, you know, it was just sort of off-the-chart cute. And, I mean, I think that was a really sweet, sweet moment there when they saw their dad. And, you know, there were a lot of sort of moments throughout the week that kind of had me in tears. I mean,
I was in tears a lot.
Yeah.
I don't cry a lot, you know. I mean, I'm not like a big crybaby, but it was just so overwhelming. I mean, and I couldn't take my eyes off of it. I had C-SPAN on all day long for the entire week.
Yeah, and go ahead, Catherine.
The other thing I really enjoyed was on Thursday, I turned the TV on as soon as we got home, and it was really great to see that whole, like, there was like about a half an hour that was all Georgia. We had John Lewis, we had Howard Dean point out this woman from Macon who'd done all this voter registration, and then we had the two representatives from the King family. I was like, man, Georgia's front and center tonight. You know, I thought that was really great. Like I and my friends here in Michigan were like, do they really think they're gonna, you know, win in Georgia? I said, there's certainly a chance. You know, I think we have not given up hope on that, you know. And I really enjoyed that, being a Georgia resident and all that. I thought that was really nice, and nice shout out for Georgia.
And I also want to add to that I thought Jane Kidd and Shirley Franklin did a beautiful job when they gave their introductory remarks when it came time for our delegation. I thought what they said was perfect, and they made me very proud. I mean, that was another moment there where, you know, it just sort of choked up, but I thought they did a beautiful job with that and didn't come across as, you know, silly like some of the other states or disorganized. They made a a very nice presentation for us, and I was very proud of them.
So nothing like the guy from Maine telling us that the sun rises there first, and that's kind of it. I saw that on Chris Matthews' show. That was pretty hysterical, the guy that couldn't follow up the sun rising first after that. Tim, your thoughts on particularly Michelle Obama?
Yeah, as to how she was received, I was looking at Scotty Rasmussen's site, and according to his polling, her approval rating has increased to such a point that she now has a higher approval rating than Cindy McCain. So that speaks for itself into how the American people received that speech. I thought it was wonderful. And secondly, I do want to complain about one thing. You know, we have a presidential election, the most important thing we can probably do in this country, once every 4 years, and I think it's shameful for the broadcast networks to show 1 hour of programming a night. You were talking about Governor Schweitzer's speech. Well, a lot of people missed that if they were tuning into the broadcast networks, so I had to get on my soapbox about that one.
Now, Tim, watching Wipeout is very important. And Big Brother, I mean, who's going to be evicted from the house, Tim? Come on, that's the matter
of the day. To be honest, David, it makes me want to hit somebody over the head with a claw hammer at those networks, okay?
Oh, it does. And luckily PBS, I guess, which everybody, if you don't have cable, don't have Dish or DirecTV, you at least get PBS. So at least that's coverage more. But it does seem kind of silly that 1 hour is not enough.
Well, I thought I watched C-SPAN all week. I couldn't take the pundits. I just couldn't take them, and I was really glad that we tuned into that, because even, you know, after the speeches were over, they sort of, like on Thursday, they showed the crowd and they showed all these happy people, and I really enjoyed the way they covered it. It was very pretty much gavel to gavel. I'm sure I didn't see it all every day because I was at work, but. But I liked the way they covered it. I felt like I got a really good sense of what was happening at the convention thanks to the coverage from C-SPAN. I think Melanie watched C-SPAN as well.
I like the approach. I mean, I like the fact that they're there to be transparent. They want to show you what's going on. They don't want to tell you what they think about what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, I guess I'm the opposite. I enjoy some of the pundits. And so I actually watched most of it on either CNN or MSNBC. I kind of flipped around at times and tried to watch a lot. And, of course, if something grabbed me that I wanted to see the raw footage, I usually would, I might flip by C-SPAN or PBS, I guess, covered a lot of raw footage. Tim, where did you get most of your coverage from?
Oh, C-SPAN. I kept it right there. Now, I would surf a little bit. One night I even turned across Fox. And there sat the magnanimous Bill O'Reilly, so I quickly kept turning. But C-SPAN, I just love it because they don't say anything. Once they gavel down, they stay on the podium. And I want to see all those people talk at what goes on. I don't know about anybody else.
Oh, no, I love that. I love seeing every little person, every person that comes out. I find it very... inspiring and all that. I enjoyed the C-SPAN coverage a lot.
Yes.
Plus, I can't take Wolf Blitzer. I just can't take him. I can't think. He makes me crazy. I can't.
When I did turn by Fox for just a moment or two, and Catherine might talk to this during the week, they had Karl Rove on, and a speech by I believe it was Bill Clinton. It was one of the Clinton speeches too. They were just so positive on it, and he was just like, no, it was Michelle Obama's speech. Everybody else is positive. He's like, oh, this was terrible. I'm just like, and then the rest of Fox went in the tank, right, whatever he said. It's just so clear, where they stand. And you think there's moments that at least they could, be objective to a point. But I think it's just impossible at this point. They're just too far into whatever their mission is.
Their current mission is to shove this vice presidential nominee down their constituents' throats, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and well, that was what all the stations were covering for Friday and, I guess, part of Saturday. Now coverage has completely gone into the hurricane, which I guess that's another topic we can talk about is, because of the hurricane, and obviously that's nothing that any human being controls, but do you think that that's going to, what kind of impact is that going to be on the two convention bounces, is that the Democratic convention was pretty much the main story all week long, whereas the Republican convention may be number two story. What do you think, Tim? What do you think is going to be the impact?
Well, obviously, they're going to have to scale back. They're missing their speaking lineup Monday. I've already heard that they're just going to gavel down for 2.5 hours of business. So they won't be on in prime time Monday night. The president's not going to be there. Dick Cheney's not coming. Of course, there are some who would say that would actually help them, but I won't go there. And Governor Jindal, who definitely is a rising star in that party, unfortunately will not be able to come as well. I was wondering if maybe they should delay that thing for a week, because there's not going to be anybody watching it. Everybody's going to watch that storm.
Can they is the question. Melanie, do you know if they can delay it?
Well, I have no idea about what, you know, their planning process is, but I'm looking at headlines here that say things like Republican convention thrown into chaos by Hurricane Gustav. I mean, if it's anything like our convention, you know, these reservations for hotels and things like this were made, you know, over a year in advance.
Yeah,
so
that's kind of what I think. It will take off time, and it's just, I mean, or I guess you'd have to depend on, like, Minnesota Republicans to fill the seats of all the people that emptied out so you could have a full house.
Well, I understood that they were having problems actually filling the house to begin with, so I mean, I think it's going to be a disaster for them, you know, whatever you think about the Republicans. I don't really wish that on anybody, but, you know,
I think they're in a really tough position, because I think it would be a disaster if they had, you know, a full house and all kinds of people and big, you know, splashy events and partying like we had last week, which, you know, not that they really do that, but while the storm is happening. So I think that would be a problem for them, because, you know, people would be like, why aren't these government officials taking care of business? There's that. And then if they don't have anybody show up, if it's dead, then it's going to see, well, you know, this is the death knell of the Republican Party. I think they're really between a rock and a hard place, and I couldn't be happier about it.
Catherine, the Republicans do party very, very hard, and may I put up George Bush's past as Exhibit A.
Well, yeah.
So anyway, do y'all know what this what Senator Obama's schedule and Senator Biden's schedule? Are they planning on calling off some things and maybe going to Katrina, going to Louisiana, places like that, to be ready to do on the ground relief efforts or something?
Oh, I would be shocked if they didn't show up.
That's what I'm saying. I just didn't know if they had made contingency plans, or if y'all had heard.
The storm has turned, and, you know, I just checked weather underground, and the last projection has it sort of, Houma is in the bullseye there. Grand Isle and Houma it's going to wipe out. So, I mean, with any luck, it should miss some of the major metropolitan areas, New Orleans and then further north, Baton Rouge. But, you know, it's still going to be bad, even if it's only a Category 3. It's going to do damage. And, you know, frankly, I don't really care about anybody's schedule. I just hope that, you know, everybody makes it through okay, and that the evacuation today is going well, and Amtrak has pulled out all the stops and is running trains out of there nonstop, and the traffic has been converted to outbound only. So, you know, they're taking this very seriously, and I think you're going to see, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Bobby Jindal, because he's a Republican, but he is a very competent administrator. And I think you're going to see, even if it does strike the New Orleans and there is damage or there is levee breaches or whatever, I think you're going to see quite a different reaction on his part than you saw on the part of Kathleen Blanco.
Yeah, I agree. They seem to be very, taking this very seriously and very, you know, being very conscientious about how they handle the you know, the whole thing, and I'm very pleased to say that. And I want to say I'm not happy about the hurricane. I'm just happy about the Republicans having to suffer for it.
Well, it's time that they did, frankly, because they're, you know, I blame Republicans in addition to the fact that Kathleen Blanco was not on the ball, but I do blame George Bush and that administration for that horrible nightmare after Katrina. And, you know, it's time that they had some blowback from that, and maybe this is their payback, karma, whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
Yeah, what a contrast from 4 years ago, the Republican convention, you know, they were attacked for using 9/11 as a backdrop for the convention. This time, the backdrop for their convention is going to be Hurricane Katrina. So it's kind of like you use your one of your finer moments as your backdrop. Now you're getting to use one of your biggest failures as your backdrop.
But can I play devil's advocate for a minute and jump in with what the Republicans might view as something positive? And they may be right about this, guys. There are two speeches that the American voters really want or need to see. And one of them is Governor Palin's on Wednesday, and one of them is Senator McCain's on Thursday. So perhaps wiping out most of what's going on Monday and Tuesday won't hurt them as badly as we might think. What do y'all think?
Yeah, there's probably some truth to that.
Well, yeah, I don't know. This is going to be hard to take because if Governor Palin mentions Hillary Clinton's name one more time, I think I'm going to throw something at the television.
Okay. Let's go ahead.
I'll send to Melanie Tell. She's got lots of TVs, so she can ruin one.
Yeah, let's go ahead and jump into that. The pick came down. I mean, I'm going to give my thought on this one first. I think if you looked at their picks they could have made, there was nobody that had any juice. It was not interesting. They had nothing going on. And I think for who they could have picked, I think as far as appeal to it, I think McCain made a good pick. Now, do I think the lady is more qualified than Joe Biden? And as far as qualifications, I think all four of them are qualified to be president. I just think I don't agree with them on the issues. I think that's what we ought to talk more about is issues and less about qualifications, because I think all four people are qualified. But I think he made as good a pick as he could. And I think if you look at Left in Alabama, one of our little blogs over in Alabama that we have, Moon Kent and others over there, come on, they've done a good strength and weakness on her pick. This interesting reading, but what is your thoughts on that, Melanie?
Well, I disagree with you that this woman is qualified to be commander in chief if something happens to John McCain, and it really infuriates me to, you know, hear these Republican spinmeisters try and sort of defend her as being, you know, everything that Hillary Clinton is and more. She's not that. She will never be that. She is a female version of Dan Quayle, as far as I can tell. I think it was a Political Insider that basically, or maybe it was Jay Bookman that said, you know, the population of Alaska could fit into Cobb County. And her own delegation doesn't support her. And I think she was a strange pick. I think she's a frightening pick. Quite frankly, I think the idea of having somebody like that as a backup to a man who is in his later years is quite scary to me, you know, let alone the fact that she is apparently a very hardcore right-wing fundamentalist creationist conservative. You know, she's about as far right-wing as they get. Now, originally I thought that the pick was because McCain needed the money from that segment of his constituents, and he has apparently gotten quite a few million dollars coming in since he announced the pick. But, you know, when she stood up and invoked the name of Hillary Clinton and Geraldine Ferraro, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that she would even go there. You know, Hillary Clinton has spent most of her political career fighting against everything this woman stands for. And you know, I hope there's nobody that would be fooled by that.
Well, as far as frightening pick, I mean, this is a party that's had Dick Cheney for the last 8 years, and I think I'd take over Dick Cheney, but I have higher hopes. I'd rather see Obama Biden in. What are your thoughts, Tim?
Well, I wouldn't take her over Dick Cheney or Dick
Cheney
for that matter. You know, the thing they better think about with this lady is right as we speak, reporters are on planes and they're headed to Alaska and they're going to go up there and see what they can find. And we've already heard rumblings about this trooper gate or whatever they're calling her firing of the Commissioner of Public Safety because he wouldn't fire her brother-in-law. But if they find something, anything, she's dead in the water. This could be a great pick for John McCain. This could be an awful pick for John McCain. I don't think there's an in-between, and I think he threw a Hail Mary pass on this thing. He wanted Joe Lieberman. We know that, but the conservative base would not stand for it. So this was not John McCain's first pick.
Well, I don't know, but we now have a Republican on the line that can tell us about some of these issues. Adam, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, you're on with Melanie Goo, Tim Shiflett, Catherine Smith, and myself. Adam, we've already introduced you. We know you write the Republican column for hometownheadlines.com. You own ABC Designs, which does political consulting for Preston Smith, among others. Adam, give us just kind of right off, what is the Republican Party looking at? I guess prior to this storm, what was the Republican Party looking to do at their convention?
Well, I think a lot of it was to reinforce Senator McCain's experience and how he's able to take on the job as being president without really any on-the-job training. And I think also just to, you know, get together and celebrate being conservatives and all of us just having a good time. And unfortunately, it looks like they're not going to be able to do a lot of that, which, you know, we do need to focus in on the storm that's coming. And I think the RNC is looking at cutting down on a lot of the different activities and just kind of get down to the business. And so should be interesting to see how they handle it and the response to the storm and everything.
Well, and I guess that was my next question was, how does this change things? And one thing kind of we mentioned earlier in the show, 4 years ago, the Republican convention chose to have the backdrop is 9/11 in New York, and people said, hey, you're using this event in the Bush administration for politics. Now the backdrop for this convention looks like it's going to be Hurricane Katrina, if you will, a negative moment in the Bush presidency. How does that play in all the changes, if you will? How does that play into the convention?
Well, if anything, it reinforces that, you know, these are state and local issues, and for Democrats to try to place blame on the federal government is totally ludicrous. And I think the voters of Louisiana at least handled their situation with getting rid of the governor that they had during Katrina. I wish New Orleans had done the same, but looks like Ray Nagin at least has learned his lesson a little bit and getting the people out before the storm actually comes. You know, it just, they didn't have the problems in Texas and Mississippi and Alabama where they had good governors. And I think it just reinforces that, you know, this is state and local issues. The federal government's there if needed. And, you know, if there's a riot or some big catastrophe that involves a lot of people taking advantage of a certain situation, that the National Guard can, that the governors can ask that the National Guard be federalized, and then the president can come in and help take charge. But hopefully this reinforces the fact that it is mostly state and local issues. But
well, if this is truly a state and local issue, what role does that leave for FEMA?
To be there, you know, in response for what the state and the local government needs. You know, if they need assistance and they should ask for it. And, you know, I think we saw with Katrina is that the governor never would ask for it. And so hopefully that with Governor Jindal down there, everything will work out, and he seems to really be on top of everything. And, you know, the biggest thing is people's lives are at stake here, and, you know, hopefully neither Democrats or Republicans will try to politicize this storm, and that most importantly we just, you know, have safe withdrawals of everybody that's on the coast. And I think after this, you know, you'll see Democrats and Republicans coming together trying to help out in the relief effort.
Yes, well, I'll go ahead and pass the question and over. Catherine, do you have any questions for Adam?
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree that there's large responsibility for many of these things at the state and local level. However, how do you balance that with the responsibility of the Army Corps of Engineers not, you know, fixing the levees as they were supposed to do over the last 20 years? And we know that, well, I think the assumption has been because it was a democratic state with a Democratic governor and a lot of Democrats in power, that they did not get their levees repaired as they were supposed to. And that is a federal issue.
I don't really know that much about the levees down there, to be honest with you. To say that any administration was trying to hurt anybody, I wouldn't even say that about a Democratic administration, that it was purposely planned to try to hurt one group of American citizens. I think it was just, you know, one of those natural disasters that, New Orleans is built below sea level, and we've known all along that it could flood at any time, and you know, to try to say that it was one administration or another administration that didn't help reinforce the levees. I mean, I don't think that anybody should try to politicize an issue that involved such mass destruction and you know, people lost lives.
Okay, Melanie, do you have any questions?
Well, yeah, I would just be curious to know what sort of feedback he's hearing about the VP choice, if, you know, folks in Rome and in that general area are happy about it or perplexed by it, or, you know, what's the feedback that he's gotten been on the selection of Governor Palin?
Glad you asked. I was in Atlanta Friday night and was at a big event at the Fox Theater, and just overwhelmingly everybody is enthused. Everybody's excited. She couldn't have been a better choice. Personally, I'm very excited. I have a 3-year-old daughter, and just the possibility that my daughter could grow up with, you know, 8 years as Governor Palin as the vice president, and hopefully, if everything works out, another 8 years as her being president, that would mean, you know, she'd be 19 and at the end of her administration. And I just think that would be an awesome thing for all of the daughters of America to be able to grow up and see a woman of her caliber occupy an administrative position as the vice president or president. And just, I think a lot of folks are very excited, and you know, she's right on the issues as far as life and the Second Amendment and energy and reform. I mean, she has the executive experience that nobody even including John McCain, I guess you could even say. Nobody has that experience on either national ticket except for her, and that's something that, you know, was needed. And, you know, we were really looking for a governor to go on there, be it Mike Huckabee or Romney. I think a lot of folks were kind of thinking those two going into it. about a month ago, but we are very excited that he chose her, and the response has just been overwhelming by conservatives. And this is what John McCain needed to do. He needed to energize the base, and I think he'll get a bounce out of this.
You don't think he would have had the same reaction from the base if he had picked Governor Huckabee?
Yes, he would have.
Because I'm originally from Louisiana, and a lot of my family is still there, my parents. And, you know, they started off as conservative Democrats, but then over the years have sort of transitioned over to voting Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very much in hopes that he would pick Huckabee, because they're all huge Huckabee fans for some reason. Huckabee just played very, very well in the South. And I think, honestly, they're a little bit perplexed about this choice. I think they'll still end up voting for John McCain, but I don't think they'll do it as gladly as they would have done if Huckabee had been on the ticket.
Well, why do they like Huckabee?
I think they think he's more authentic, that he's not, you know, a polished politician. They like the fact that he's very conservative on the social issues, but that he seems like a regular guy. You know, at the end of the day, I do think a lot of politics comes down to maybe not necessarily who you want to have a beer with, but, you know, who do you like the best? Who, whose voice do you like? Whose message do you like? You know, and they just had a very positive reaction to him from the very beginning. They all voted for him in the primary. So I
think everything you just said, you know, except for she's just a regular gal, you know, fits Governor Palin. She's very conservative, and as people get to know her, but to be honest with you, you know, just a lot of evangelical voters know where she stands, and that's something that I think they are, if they do not know it, they are learning very quickly. Because, you know, that's one of the main things that especially evangelicals like to look at is where does this person stand on the issue of life, and you know, just her own personal experience of her most recent child and her own personal commitment to the issue of life is just such a motivating factor for conservatives. And it's just been, I go to one of the largest Southern Baptist churches here in Rome, and very strong Huckabee support back in the primary. Of course, Floyd County, Huckabee won Floyd County by a pretty large margin. But just today, just the number of folks who were coming up to me, and they know I'm involved with politics, and just saying how excited they were that McCain chose Governor Palin. Even though a lot of them admitted, I didn't even know who she was a week ago, but, you know, all of us probably did a Wikipedia search on her after she was nominated, just to say, hey, where does she stand on all these issues? And, you know, when I admit I had to myself just to make sure 100% that she was a conservative, but I don't
quite understand one thing, though, and I'm not trying to be facetious when I say
sure. This
or cute or anything, but, you know, for this particular base that you just described, the evangelicals, I mean, is there a disconnect there? I mean, is it just sort of generally thought that a woman who has this many children should be at home with those children, as opposed to being in any kind of a role of leadership? And again, I'm not trying to be cute.
I think the White House is a fitting home for her. I think that's the way a lot of folks do. I mean, sure, evangelicals value motherhood, and they value the role of females in the house, and you know, my wife stays at home as much as she can. She does work in the afternoon. If I get home early enough, you know, I think every mother, be it liberal or conservative, plays a huge impact on the life of a child, just as a father does. But, you know, conservatives are more looking for where the person stands on the issues rather than their sex or their race or anything that, you know, that the general public usually looks at and tries to say, oh, well, she's a female, or, oh, this person's Hispanic, or whatever. It's really where they stand on the issues.
I have a question for you. This is Catherine again.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about her executive experience, and certainly there's no denying that she has been governor for, what, about a year and a half, I guess. But she's the governor of a state that has no fiscal problems. They are oil rich, and they have no income tax, no personal income taxes, no sales tax, and they really have no fiscal challenges in Alaska, as well as having a very, very limited problems with poverty and all the things that in many of our states, and I think Arkansas is a good example. I think that Governor Huckabee has done a good job of reforming some of the education policies and fiscal policies in Arkansas. I'm just not sure I understand how the executive experience of a governor in a state like Alaska, which is about the same size as DeKalb County or Cobb County, I'm not sure how that translates to the executive experience required for a president. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about that.
I don't really know that much about the operations of Alaska. I know as an executive, obviously, you make many different decisions than you do as a state or a federal legislator. And, you know, just being able to, even, you know, being a mayor, as she was, you have to make tough decisions, and you have to, basically the buck stops with you, and it's not like you can pass it on to 99 other people or, I don't even know how many folks are in the Illinois Senate, but I imagine that's around 55 or so. But, you know, it's not like you can pass it on or as Barack did a lot, just vote present. You have to actually take a stand. And you know, it basically boils down to it's your signature on those bills or your veto on those bills. And I think she has got a proven record of really taking a tough stand against corrupt Republicans, corrupt Democrats, and folks just trying to take advantage of the government up there. And I think she's done a good job as far as what I've been able to read up on her the past couple of days.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, sir. Well, I wanted to change gears just a little bit and ask you a little bit about some recent polling. The generic congressional ballot, in that the Democrats lead by anywhere from 8 to 12 points, and yet the presidential race is essentially tied. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I'm surprised. I have not seen anything on a generic Democrat-Republican congressional, considering the approval rating of the Democratic Congress. I wouldn't think that it would be that much of a difference, but it may be. I mean, I'll take your word on it. You know, I was just watching 60 Minutes, actually, before I came on here, and that same question, I think, was given to Barack about why wasn't he polling better when President Bush's approval ratings are so low. And he really didn't have an answer. I am going to have to kind of say I don't really know exactly why. I think it basically comes down to this. When you know, most people don't know who their congressman is. You know, it's one of those things where, especially in a district where, you know, the guy's been running a couple of times, sometimes he doesn't have opposition. You know, Phil Gingrich here, whatever his opponent's name is, I couldn't even tell you. You know, Phil doesn't even have any signs up yet out here. So it's just one of those things where I don't think people, you know, it's just they go in and Phil's got a pretty Republican district, so they vote for the Republican. Whereas we really are getting to know who the candidate is for president on both on both tickets. And, you know, that probably has a lot more to do with it, just knowing their personalities and knowing who they are. And if we lived in such a world where there was so much attention focused in on a congressional candidate as there is, you know, 24/7 coverage of a congressional candidate as there is for the president, you know, we probably wouldn't have half of the members in there that we do, but, you know, I think that's probably the case. Not really knowing the data that you're referring to, but that would be my guess.
Okay. And Tim, go ahead. One more question that I'd like to ask you about polling. The latest Real Clear Politics poll of polls has Senator McCain ahead in Georgia by 6.3 percentage points. And my question to you is, do you get a feel that this state is in play this year or not?
I don't. I mean, I really don't. The only thing that could cause it to be in play is possibly a groundwork among African-American organizations and churches to try to deliver the vote as they never have before, and really trying to get it out. That possibly could cause Georgia to be more in play. But then again, I think if that were really the case, he might would see kind of an upswing in Alabama and Mississippi that you really don't find there. I don't really believe that. I think a lot of it just, you know, is, to be honest with you, Barack is a very appealing guy. He's very charismatic. And, you know, I think that John McCain does have a kind of a charisma problem that others suffer from. He doesn't have the charisma of Barack. But as his campaign goes along, and to be honest with you, if there's any more debates like there was at Saddleback Church, I think McCain will walk away with this with a huge landslide come November. I just think it was a huge difference in the way those guys know how to communicate, and that came out a big time at Saddleback. And I'm sure the Obama people are really studying that film. I just think that proves how well McCain does in those situations. And I'm not sure how many debates are planned coming up, but, you know, I'm sure that they really are worried that he wouldn't, you know, not be able to handle McCain in those debates.
Okay, thank you, sir. David?
Yes, well, Adam, thanks for joining us, and I'll let you off the line, so if that way if Air Force Academy graduate Bud Gammon needs to get a hold of you, you being one of his future constituents.
And what is he running for?
Bud Gammon runs for Congress.
Is he running for city council?
Air Force Academy graduate, one from Rome, Georgia, born and raised. I know a lot of some of the leaders in Rome, when they heard about him running, they were like, how many years has it been since Rome's had a congressman? And they were like, wow, this is really exciting. So, I mean, I know that is something that some people are finding exciting, the fact that this district's been controlled by folks in Cobb County so long, and then, you know, Bud being from Rome, somewhere outside of Cobb.
Yeah, and, you know, it's great. I'm glad that he's running. I think every, especially member of Congress, should be challenged, just because Republicans and Democrats need to be challenged for congressional seats, just because, and to be honest with you, I wish we had term limits, because I think that, you know, it should be a citizen legislature instead of a career political place. But I'm glad Bud's running. But to be honest with you, I don't think he stands a chance, but I'm sure he's a great guy and glad he served our country.
Well, thank you for being on, and we'll look for the convention and see what unfolds out of it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, Tim, it's kind of around that time where you do your outrage of the week. I'll let you go ahead and do that.
Well, as luck would have it, I'm going to disagree with some earlier comments from our guest, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the situation in Louisiana. Well, we all know about the troubles that our neighbors in New Orleans are experiencing. We see disturbing images everywhere on TV showing a mass exodus on Interstate 10 and the ghost towns left behind to face the approaching storm. And the whole country watches and feels concern for our fellow Americans in harm's way. Now, here's the part of all of this that really gets to me. There are some Republicans, and I've heard them, who are saying, just wait, things will be different than it was 3 years ago. This time we have the Republicans in charge. I suppose that they are making an allusion to Governor Jindal, because as we know at the time of Katrina, Governor Blanco was in office. But of course, they never mention the inept response of the Bush administration to that disaster. No, they say it was all the fault of Governor Blanco or New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin. They never add, of course, that the only entity equipped to deal with such a monstrous tragedy is the federal government, which at the moment is in the hands of the not-so-capable George Bush. But when it comes to the Bush administration, reality is not something that they deal with anyway. Does anyone remember this gem from the president? And I quote, I think Brownie is doing a great job. Oh yeah, nothing like having FEMA directed by a dog show judge. And how about this one? Remember this one? Remember when Barbara Bush visited the refugees in the Astrodome in Houston, and she informed the media folks with her that those folks who had lost everything were better off in that shelter than they ever were in their lives before. And my personal favorite comes from those who have said, well, why didn't these people just get up and leave? Well, and go where? How can poor people with no transportation, sick people in hospitals, and prisoners in the local jail just leave? I mean, 1,600 lives were lost, and 70,000 people were trapped. And for 3 days, the Bush administration just sat there. And they're trying to make some political hay off of this now? Well, of course they are. Just today, Republican strategist Alex Castellano told CNN that this hurricane could help the Republicans politically. I surely do wish someone had just slapped him when he said that, because this isn't a time for politics. This is the time to deal with the disaster at hand, and this is a time to do it right and not repeat the mistakes of 3 years ago. And we can do without the outrageous mouth running that we have heard about this from the Republicans in the last couple of days. President Bush, as we speak, remains at the White House monitoring this storm. Well, that's good. I'm glad he's doing that. But just as a little bit of trivia, you know where he was on August 29th, 2005, when Katrina hit? Well, he was in the state of Arizona, and he was photographed by a White House photographer presenting a birthday cake to none other than John McCain, David.
I was going to guess the ranch. That seems to be a safe guess.
I've seen the picture. It's a big old cake with about 700 candles on it. And there he was when Katrina was hitting. Absolutely. You think that might show up on an ad somewhere?
Hmm? I hope so.
I believe you when you say in Arizona. And honestly, I tell you what, there's a book by Douglas Brinkley called The Great Deluge, and it really, and it's not a partisan book. He's a historian. It's a very, very interesting book, and it's good listening because it really tells you, I mean, really, he, in his opinion, Catherine Blanco got a raw deal. I mean, a lot of the Republicans really latched onto her because she was the Democrat to blame. But his number one blame went to Ray Nagin before FEMA, but then, of course, Michael Brown, and then Bush's picking of Michael Brown, he didn't spare casting some blame on them, too. But like I said, it was Nagin first, and then that put Blanco down the list, and if you will, the three politicians. third to blame.
Well, I mean, David, you know, all Democrats are not created equal, and I have to say I'm pretty partisan, and I think you know that.
Yes.
And Kathleen Blanco didn't fail because she was a Democrat, and she didn't fail because she was a woman. She failed because she was incompetent. And
well, but she failed least, is I think what he was trying to say. Ray Nagin failed more than she did. Brown, and then through Brown Bush, failed more than Blanco, and then Blanco. He didn't say Blanco did a good job. It was just there was less blame to put on her than the other two, was his supposition.
Okay. Well.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not. I mean, it's not, and we wouldn't want to, you know, hold her up and go, oh, this is the Democratic model by no means. But
I mean, her own staff, David, referred to her as Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mitch Landrieu would have been far better of a person to be the what we want to think about as a Democrat in Louisiana than Blanco.
I think it's a cautionary tale too, because honestly, I regret having done anything to support her campaign, and I think we need to start getting a lot more picky about these Democrats and not just. I've never voted for a Republican, and I would never vote for a Republican, but. You know, I think we need to be more responsible about the people that we recruit and the people that we support, and I'll include myself in that. You know, it's our responsibility. It's. I look at the Republicans and their choice of people like Dan Quayle and Governor Palin, and I think, you know, they don't really take this very seriously. They'll just throw anybody up there. So, you know, I think it's incumbent upon us as voters and activists and volunteers and party people to just start doing a better job of finding better people to fill these offices.
Yes. Well, I guess, what are y'all looking at the week ahead? And we'll kind of end with that.
Well, I'm hoping that storm doesn't do too much damage and that everybody is out, is safely removed from New Orleans and the surroundings, and looking forward to some of these speeches this week and see how it goes at the up in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I guess as we're talking about this week ahead, do any of y'all think that the convention being in Minnesota will either A, help the Republicans win Minnesota, or B, help Norm Coleman hold on to his Senate seat whereas he wouldn't have won it without the convention? Tim, what do you think there?
Blah, 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 blah. I think it's more of an upper Midwest thing. The selection of the Twin Cities. I do think they did have in mind Senator Coleman, and he is in a unexpectedly tight race. But I believe it was more of an upper Midwest thing because the Republicans really want to break through in the Rust Belt this year. They really need to do that. That's why they chose that region.
Melanie, you have any thoughts there?
No, sorry.
Okay.
No.
That's okay. Catherine, any thoughts?
I think Tim's got it right on the money. I think that it was a combination of Norma Coleman's seat. I think they're really afraid of Al Franken. I think he's the kind of candidate that frightens the Republican Party because he's smart, he's funny, he's popular, and kind of a, you know, having unexpected success. But also I think they are really trying to get, you know, Wisconsin, you know, Michigan, and, you know, try to, you know, laugh through some of those voters as well. So I think Tim's got it on the money.
Well, and see, that's the thing. I think we've talked about this before. I don't think there's a single state that voted for Kerry that Obama will lose. I don't foresee that. I mean, I would like to see some polling once after the Republican convention happened to be 100% firm on my prediction, but I don't think he's going to break through in any state there. And so, therefore, I'm thinking, well, maybe they would have been better off holding their convention elsewhere, although maybe they was just saying, hey, let's try to grow the party into new areas, and that's not necessarily bad for down the road. But
Well, maybe they knew they weren't going to have very much money, and they got a good deal.
Possible. Although, you know, these things get paid for by other folks. But their fundraising has upticked, like we mentioned earlier, and this weekend's probably been their best fundraising weekend of the campaign. So my thinking is they're the Republican Party. They'll find some money. They'll be able to get their message out to a point, but we shall see. Well, it's been a great show, and it's good having a Republican perspective on to kind of see the other side sometimes. Periodically we like doing this. We had Buzz on in the past. We've had the fellow from Strategic Vision. It's good to have that on periodically. I'm sure we'll do it at least once before the general, or maybe, if nothing else, a post-mortem, if you will, after the fact. But, Melanie, good having you on this week.
Thanks, David. I enjoyed it.
Yes. Well, see y'all next week.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night.
Night.